"What things?" Erne patted him on the shoulder, making Brother think for a moment of Vorbis. Vorbis, who never touched another person inside his head, was a great toucher with his hands.
"Best if you don't know what's happening," said Erne.
"But I don't know what's happening," said Brother.
"Good, that's the way."
The burly man gestured with his knife towards the tunnels that led into the rock.
"Are we going or what?" he demanded.
Erne ran after him and then stopped briefly and turned.
"Be careful," he said. "We need what's in your head."
Brother watched them go.
"So do I," he murmured,
and then he was alone again. But then he thought, "Hold on, I don't have to be. I'm a bishop. At least I can watch. Om's gone and soon the world will end, so at least I might as well watch it happen." Sandals flapping, Brother set off towards the place. Bishops move diagonally. That's why they often turn up where the kings don't expect them to be.
"You god-awful idiot! Don't go that way!"
The sun was well up now. In fact, it was probably setting, if Didactylos's theories about the speed of light were correct. But in matters of relativity, the point of view of the observer is very important, and from Om's point of view, the sun was a golden ball in a flaming orange sky. He pulled himself up another slope and stared blearily at the distant citadel. In his mind's eye, he could hear the mocking voices of small gods. They didn't like a god who had failed. They didn't like that at all. It let them all down. It reminded them of mortality. He'd be thrust out into the deep desert where no one would ever come, ever, until the end of the world. He shivered in his shell. Erne and Fergmann walked nonchalantly through the tunnels of the citadel, using the kind of nonchalant walk which, had there been anyone to take an interest in it, would have drawn detailed and arrow-sharp attention to them within seconds. But the only people around were those with vital jobs to do. Besides, it was not a good idea to stare too hard at the guards in case they stared back. Simony had told Erne he'd agreed to this. He couldn't quite remember doing so. The sergeant knew a way into the citadel that was sensible, and Erne knew about hydraulics. Fine. Now he was walking through these dry tunnels with his tool belt clinking. There was a logical connection, but it had been made by somebody else. Fergmann turned a corner and stopped by a large grill, which stretched from floor to ceiling. It was very rusty. It might once have been a door. There was a suggestion of hinges rusted into the stone. Erne peered through the bars. Beyond, in the gloom, there were pipes.
"Eureka," he said.
"Going to have a bath, then," said Fergmann.
"Just keep watch."
Erne selected a short crowbar from his belt and inserted it between the grill and the stonework. "Give me a foot of good steel and a wall to brace my foot against." The grill ground forward and then popped out with a leaden sound.
"And I can change the world."
He stepped inside the long, dark, damp room and gave a whistle of admiration. No one had done any maintenance for, well, for as long as it took iron hinges to become a mass of crumbling rust. But all this still worked. He looked up at lead and iron buckets bigger than he was, and a tangle of man-sized pipes. This was the breath of God. Probably the last man who knew how it worked had been tortured to death years before, or as soon as it was installed. Killing the creator was a traditional method of patent protection. There were the levers, and there, hanging over pits in the rock floor, were the two sets of counterweights. Probably it had only take a few hundred gallons of water to swing the balance either way. Of course, the water'd have to be pumped up.
"Sergeant?"
Fergmann peered round the door. He looked nervous, like an atheist in a thunderstorm.
"What?"
Erne pointed.
"There's a big shaft through the wall there, see? At the bottom of the gear chain."
"The what?"
"The big knobbly wheels."
"Oh, yeah."
"Where does the shaft go to?"
"Don't know. There's a big treadmill of correction through there."
Ah, the breath of God was ultimately the sweat of men. Didactylos would have appreciated the joke, Erne thought. He was aware of a sound that had been there all the time, but was only now penetrating through his concentration. It was tinny and faint and full of echoes, but it was voices from the pipes. The sergeant, to judge by his expression, had heard them too. Erne put his ear to the metal. There was no possibility of making out words, but the general religious rhythm was familiar enough.
"It's just the service going on in the temple," he said. "It's probably resonating off the doors and the sounds being carried down the pipes."
Fergmann did not look reassured.
"No gods are involved in any way," Erne translated.